This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Accordingly, together with many other countries in the world, saw fit to refer this whole Israeli government action to the International Criminal Court. We have put through a referral because we believe that war crimes are being committed there.
That's President Cyril Ramaphosa on South Africa asking the International Criminal Court to investigate alleged war crimes by Israel in Gaza. Details coming up also. The diamond industry worries about a move by a group of seven countries to ban imports of Russian diamonds. And Nigeria's annual editors' conference focuses on the economy, technology, and the role of the media. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The head of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees today said Gaza is under a total communications blackout. Philip Lazzarini blamed the blackout on a lack of fuel for electricity. Also, Israel soldiers today continue searching Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza in a raid that began early Wednesday. Israel Defense Force, IDF officials say, the full search of the hospital's several buildings could take weeks. IDF troops displayed guns they say were found hidden in one building, but have yet to release any evidence of the central Hamas command center that Israel has said is concealed beneath the complex. Hamas and staff at the hospital, Gaza's largest, deny the allegations. United Nations officials have estimated more than 1.5 million people have been displaced in Gaza since the war began on October the 7th, when Hamas militants from Gaza attacked Israeli communities. More than 1,200 Israelis died in that attack. Hamas took more than 240 people back to Gaza as hostages. The Israeli offensive since then has killed nearly 12,000 people in Gaza, the Hamas-run health ministry has said. Earlier today, I spoke with journalist Linda Granstein in Jerusalem. So, what is the military saying about the search of the Al-Shifa hospital?
Yes, the Shifa Hospital was the biggest hospital in Gaza, and Israeli forces took over Shifa, and there was fighting yesterday. The one detail you didn't mention is that apparently the Israeli soldiers took some bodies from the hospital, and that obviously has the families of the 240 hostages very nervous, and they say that nobody from the government has updated them on who these bodies are and if they're Hamas militants or if they're hostages. Israel originally said that it had found a laptop that had information about the hostages in Shifa Hospital, and it turned out that there was a photo of Israeli soldier Uri Magadish, who was the Israeli soldier who a couple of weeks ago was actually rescued by Israeli troops in northern Gaza. She was working on the border, and it turns out that the photo that was on the computer was from before October 7th, not afterwards. So far, there's no concrete proof that either the hostages were held underneath Shifa Hospital, which is what Israel originally thought, or that that there is this sort of command and control center at the hospital. They did, however, find guns. There was a bag with guns and hand grenades and some other things hidden behind an MRI machine, which Israel says proves that Hamas was using the hospital, for terrorism.
Is there anything known about the leaflets reportedly dropped in parts of southern Gaza telling people to evacuate?
Yes, they're the same leaflets that Israel dropped for a couple of weeks in northern Gaza. These were dropped in the area of Khan Yunis, which is a large city in southern Gaza. The problem is there's not really anywhere for people to evacuate to. As you said in your introduction, hundreds of thousands of people have already left northern Gaza and moved to southern Gaza, placing a strain on the facilities they have there. The United Nations, UNRWA, which, is responsible for the Palestinians, says that they may have to shut down their operations completely if they don't get fuel. Israel yesterday, for the first time, allowed fuel in, but it's not enough, and they still need more. So it's not clear where these Palestinians who have been sheltering in Khan Yunis or who are actually from Khan Yunis are supposed to go.
And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that Israel has a clear goal of destroying Hamas's military and governing capabilities, as well as freeing the hostages. So is that the goal of Israel's military operation in Gaza?
Yes, it seems to be. I mean, first of all, Israel believes the hostages are still being held in Gaza, and that at least, some of them are alive. So, but it's been now 41 days, and some of the hostages had medical conditions or were wounded in the fighting. There was actually a press conference by doctors of the hostages from before they were taken, in which they described some of the conditions that their patients were suffering from, and saying that without medicine, they would not be able to keep living, especially elderly patients who were taken obviously didn't have their medicine with them. So there really is growing concern in Israel about the hostages. And in terms of, getting rid of Hamas as a military power, yes, that's what Israel says its goal is. The thing is that nobody's quite clear what's going to happen after that goal is achieved. You know, who's going to be in charge of Gaza? There are 2.3 million very poor people there. The rebuilding efforts, which if you look at the photos and videos coming out of Gaza, there's widespread destruction in northern Gaza. You know, who is going to help rebuild Gaza, and where are people supposed to live meanwhile?
So what other developments, Linda, are you hearing about?
There's definitely concern about a humanitarian situation in southern Gaza, in Rafah, which is where the aid is coming in, close to the border with Egypt. Apparently, there's sewage running in the streets. And you're talking about people who are crowded together. It's not clear, what are people supposed to do? There's concern of cholera and other diseases. There's also concern that if this goes on much longer, it's starting to get cold. The winter is starting. How are people supposed to live? Israel says that people from Gaza who are refugees and can't go home should go to Arab countries, especially Egypt. Egypt so far has not been willing to take in people. Also, just in terms of medical needs, Turkey has brought in a ship with a bunch of field hospitals. The United Arab Emirates has said it's going to build 3 desalination plants for water in Gaza, but all of these things take time. And meanwhile, people are facing an acute humanitarian crisis.
Linda Grantstein in Jerusalem, updating us on the latest. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
President Cyril Ramaphosa says South Africa has filed a referral to the International Criminal Court asking for the investigation of alleged war crimes by Israel in Gaza. The referral will be a big test for South Africa's view of the ICC after earlier attempts by the country to exit the court, accusing it of bias. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says South Africa is concerned by Israel's bombardment of Gaza. Speaking to journalists Wednesday in Qatar, he raised strong criticism about Israel's raids on hospitals and the deaths of children. Ramaphosa said South Africa has no doubt that ICC's intervention is now required.
As South Africa, we have accordingly, together with many other countries in the world, so fit to refer this whole Israeli government action to the International Criminal Court. We have put through a referral because we believe that war crimes are being committed there.
Ramaphosa made the comments as he wrapped up his state visit to Qatar and called on other countries to denounce Israel's bombardment of Gaza. The president said his government condemned Hamas's invasion of Israel last month when militants killed more than 1,200 civilians and took more than 200 hostages. He said Israel's actions required all countries to unite in calling for ceasefire. His government previously described Israel's bombardment of Gaza as genocide and Holocaust. Israel has said it is taking all measures to protect civilians. It accuses the Hamas militants of committing war crimes in its massacre and kidnapping of over 200 Israelis on October 7. Israel also says Hamas is using its own civilians as human shields by hiding troops and military supplies in civilian facilities such as hospitals and schools. On Wednesday, Israel announced it had found Hamas armaments in Al-Shifa Hospital. Hamas has called the charges lies and cheap propaganda. The government's decision to refer Israel to the ICC has received sharp criticism from supporters of Israel in South Africa. Benji Schulman is the director of public policy at the South African Zionist Federation. He said South Africa should stop interfering with Israel's rights to defend itself and instead facilitate the release of hostages taken in by Hamas.
The South African Zionist Federation maintains that Israel continues to conduct its defensive war against extremist Hamas organization in line with international law and against those who have killed women and children and Holocaust survivors, and have also taken 240 hostages from a variety of nationalities.
South Africa has never clearly defined its position on ICC. Some officials in government and the African National Congress Party called for the country to leave the court after it asked South Africa to arrest Russian President Vladimir Putin on an ICC warrant if he attended a summit in South Africa. Putin attended the summit in August virtually instead of in person. The same call arose in 2015 when South Africa was pressured for failing to arrest former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir under an ICC arrest warrant when he attended an African Union summit in Johannesburg. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The International Medical Aid Group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says Sudanese authorities are preventing surgical equipment from reaching hospitals in the capital Khartoum under the control of the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Fighting broke out in mid-April between Sudan's army and the RSF, leading to thousands of civilian deaths. Claire Nicolette, MSF's head of emergencies for Sudan, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the situation will likely cause the deaths of hundreds of patients, including women and babies.
The government and especially the military forces are enforcing this ban for surgical and medical items.
Why are they doing this?
That was said indirectly, but mostly it's for the RSF soldiers not to be treated. But now it's extending to, of course, everyone living in this part of Khartoum.
What kinds of life-saving surgeries are being prevented from being carried out?
So basically, all surgery will not be feasible very soon in all the hospitals of South Khartoum, because we already stopped in one of the hospitals, and MSF is still supporting another hospital in south of Khartoum. And we are really running low on supply. So it means that, for instance, C-sections, emergency C-section in particular, won't be feasible anymore. So in a few days, most probably we are not able to do C-section for women.
Have these maternal moms and their babies died because of not having the equipment that the doctors need?
Yes, if we cannot perform a C-section, yes, that's what will happen exactly.
Doesn't this violate international law?
It is violating international law. It is violating the agreement they signed in Jeddah in May as well. So both parties signed an agreement in Jeddah in May 2023. So this is definitely violating these laws and agreements.
Are there surgical supplies available somewhere nearby? And if so, where are they?
Yeah, so we have a lot of equipment, surgical supply ready to ship or not even to ship because it's by truck in one Medani, which is 3 hours from Khartoum. So very close to that, we have all the supply needed for continuing surgery.
How many hospitals in Khartoum are we talking about?
So at the moment, Doctors Without Borders, we are supporting two hospitals in this area. One, we already stopped the surgery because of this situation, and we are continuing with another hospital.
That's Claire Nicolette, MSF's head of emergencies for Sudan, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from Paris. Leaders in a diamond industry meeting in Botswana are concerned at a move by a group of seven countries to ban imports of Russian diamonds could harm other producers producing countries. G7 countries worry that cash from diamonds mined in Russia is used to finance the war against Ukraine.
Participants at the Natural Diamond Summit in the Botswana capital, Gaborone, are concerned about the group of seven nations' plan to ban Russian diamonds, which would mean all stones would be sent to Antwerp, Belgium, for certification. The G7's plan to send all diamonds to Antwerp, the world's biggest diamond trading center, is meant to block Russia's diamonds from the global market. Russia is the leading producer of rough diamonds. Botswana, the world's second largest producer of the gems, diamond dealer De Beers Group and the World Diamond Council are among key industry players opposed to the move to send stones to Belgium first. Speaking at the Diamond Summit Monday, Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi said his country is committed to ensuring the transparent and conflict-free trade in diamonds.
The historic decision for Botswana to host the Kimberley Process Permanent Secretariat bears testament to our commitment as a country to responsible sourcing and the critical work done by the KP in stemming the flow of conflict diamonds from global markets.
He says his country will only support efforts put in place by the Kimberley Process, a commitment to remove conflict diamonds from the global supply chain.
We as Botswana and others will protect the KP, the Kimberley Process, and refuse to be party to its undermining, particularly as we engage with our partners globally to ensure enhanced traceability throughout the world. The provenance of Botswana diamonds is top of mind in our journey of transformation.
But Belgian-based diamond mining researcher Hans Miquet supports the G7 proposal. The bloc, whose members are Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan and the United States, accounts for 70% of global diamond demand.
The G7 is still discussing how they are going to trace and ban Russian diamonds. So we don't really know yet how their scheme will function precisely and which requirements will eventually be imposed on the trade. One of the proposals on the table would indeed require all rough diamonds to pass through Belgium in the first instance to be uploaded on a blockchain traceability system. For some African producer countries that are currently marketing their diamonds in the United Arab Emirates, for instance, Dubai, this would require some reorganizing indeed.
Miquet adds, with consumer confidence in diamonds dwindling due to ethical concerns, there is a need to improve the product's traceability.
However, in my view, the costs of these traceability efforts are dwarfed by its benefits. Firstly, because improving traceability means improving transparency and streamlining the supply chain. So, in other words, producer countries will have a better insight on how much value their diamonds are generating further downstream, and thus more leverage to push for better prices.
De Beers has urged the G7, as it develops a traceability framework, to engage with key producers, the majority of which are in Africa, to ensure input from across the industry. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
Earlier today, I had the pleasure of talking to a special guest in studio, Khadijatu Grace Kamara, Sierra Leone's Deputy Minister of Tourism and Cultural Affairs. First, if I'm planning my next vacation, why should I go to Sierra Leone? What will I find in Freetown? And is there anything interesting for international visitors there?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. Well, I'll tell you first, why should you come to Freetown, Sierra Leone? Because it is the place to be, the safest place to be, and the best place for tourism. Sierra Leone is a small country on the western coast of Africa. When you enter Sierra Leone, the first experience you get is a warm welcome from the locals, and as well as our delicious local delicacies. Not to talk less of our beautiful beaches that are so clean and lush, ready to welcome you by the seashores. We also have lots of activities going on this holiday coming. We are planning for the African Caribbean Festival. We're also planning for different other festivals that are coming up. One of the things that we're big on now is local and domestic tourism. And so if you come to Sierra Leone, you'll be able to be a part of our local domestic tourism with local festivals and different events that will be going on locally.
So talk to us a little bit about the, the ethnical, the cultural, the diversity, the religious, the ethnic diversity of Sierra Leone.
So Sierra Leone,
the Creole angle.
So Sierra Leone, we have two religions, of course, the Muslim and the Christians. We all cohabitate peacefully. We celebrate each other's holidays. We do share meals when holidays of anybody's religion come up. Creole is our local language, which is mainly broken pidgin English. Mm-hmm. It's quite different from every other West African country's Creole pidgin, because Sierra Leone, we the only country where you use air, land, and sea to enter. We're uniquely different and we stand out in all that we do. Now, most of the things that you'll experience when you come is our people are very loving. They're very warm, welcoming. They will hail you more than they will hail their own. That's how much they love visitors. And so we're just loving, peaceful country that is open and ready for touristic visits and as well as business.
So now to your trip to Washington. What are your goals for the visit here?
I'm here on a five-day trip. I'm here to receive a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Office of President Biden for my humanitarian work, both here in the States and as well as back home, Sierra Leone.
Anything else that you plan to do while you're in Washington?
Well, actually, I'd want to make some visits to see how best I can use those to take back home to my substantive minister to see how best we can discuss in improving tourism.
I'll definitely be visiting Freetown.
Please
the
come.
Way you actually described it. And thank you so much for joining us, Sierra Leone's Deputy Minister of Tourism and Cultural Affairs, Khadijatu Grace Ahini Kamara.
Thank you.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.